Listen on Demand, brought to you by 680 News.
Ah, Mr. Benson, good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
Doing all right.
Okay. Is it nice and sunny and warm down there in Arizona?
Yeah, a little warmer than warm, though.
Oh, yeah.
Arizona.
Yeah. Well, listen, we need some of that, so you can bring some of that with you when you come up. How's that?
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Well, it's great you're going to be visiting Canada. I understand you're going to Vancouver and Toronto, two of our best cities.
That's right. And I'm looking forward to it, too, because I don't play enough in Canada.
All right. Well, we'll take more of you anytime. Tell me a little bit about the show. Are you going to be swinging? You going to be popping? You are R&B-ing? What are we going to be hearing?
A little bit of all of that, because I find if I leave something out, the public will let me know it. Hey, I came to hear this. You didn't do none of that. You know, so I better do a little bit of everything to avoid that argument.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Now, I know you don't like to be put into a box because you do a lot of different styles of music, but how would you describe your overall style and concept of music personally?
I think the reason why my career has been so fluid is because I let all my experiences show whenever I play music, you know? My life hasn't been sitting in a corner in a jazz club. No, it's been moving around all over this planet, and I hear everything. I meet people from all different walks of life. And so I'm a combination of all of those things, all of those experiences, and it shows in my music on a natural basis. You know, it's not something I had to dream up or try to sell. That's just me, who I am. And so all of those genres have done well. R&B songs have gone over very well. The jazz tunes, we've been at the top of the charts with those. And, you know, the pop tunes are doing very, very well. And the dance songs and the love songs. So they all work.
That's great. Now you talk about love songs, but isn't there a bit of romance in all your songs?
I think so. I have seven children. They're telling us something there. Seven boys, as a matter of fact.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
How important is your home life to you, to giving you a base for your life?
Well, that's what it's all about. To me, the greatest experience of all is raising my children, you know, and seeing them turn out to be whatever it is they want to be, you know, giving them vibes, you know, giving them ideas, and seeing them respond to it, you know. And giving them gifts, you know, because when my career took off and became successful, I could go back and give my kids a life that I never had. So all of it came out good.
Fantastic. And have any of them taken to the family business?
Yes. I have four musicians among my boys, songwriters, and one of them is on the road with me. Another one used to be on the road with me. Also, he sings and dances and plays saxophone and keyboards.
Must be a special feeling to take the stage with one of your sons.
That is a great feeling. And to see him jump out there in front and take over. Of course, that one's not with the band anymore, but I have another one that's on the road with me now. He's not a musician. He's my personal assistant and a production guy. He'll put on the show.
Fantastic. And he'll be accompanying you to Toronto, will he? Super. And how important is it to tell a story in a song? Because a lot of the songs I notice you pick, they tell beautiful, sometimes sad stories.
Well, I work with some really great people, but I take advice from people, too. Quincy Jones says, stay away from the sorry songs. The most successful songs are usually songs that are kind of happy, you know, with people, uplifting songs. But every now and then, somebody will come up with one of those Somebody Done Somebody Wrong song, and it'll become a smash. So there's no set rule on that.
Yeah, like This Masquerade, which...
Connecting with your songs, you know.
Yeah. This Masquerade, for instance, I mean, lovely, and not really a sad song, but there's kind of a melancholy, haunting thing going on with it, right?
Yeah, it sure is. And it does lean on the sad side. It does. But the way that it's put together, it has highlights in it, you know. Some parts of it go down, and then it brings you back up, you know. And it's a story that many people can relate to. That's what makes it so big. Their lives have been like that, you know. Everybody's hung out with somebody they thought was going well, and it wasn't going as well as they thought, you know. It causes you to have second thoughts about things and to examine your relationships, and that's what that one is all about.
Yeah. And how influential has Quincy Jones been on your career?
He's a genius. He knows what he's talking about. He doesn't just produce a record. He produces a product that is viable and will be around a long time. Whitney Houston said this about him. She said Quincy Jones was a song's best friend. And I think she was right about that. Because I worked with Quincy Jones, and every time he touched a song, something special happened. And, you know, Give Me the Night is only one of the many beautiful songs on that album. All of them had his touch to it, and they all came across like masterpieces of music.
Yeah, he's been like the father of the music industry, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's true. He brings people together very easily. When he says, he makes a phone call and says, man, I need you on this record, usually people come up with, I'll be there. And I've done it several times with him, you know,
yeah.
Beyond the recording that I did with him, which sold 5 or 6 million copies. So, I don't feel like I owe him anything so much as I do that what a relationship to have with a man with that kind of talent. And I learn something every time because he's a teacher.
Yeah, for sure. Now, let's go back to how you started out. I mean, is it true you started out playing a ukulele at the age of 7?
Yeah, I played the ukulele. My father found it in a trash can, and it was all broken up. He glued it back together and put some strings on it, and he taught me to play the first 2 or 3 chords. And from there, I went to, you know, took it out on street corners, and people asked me if I could play it, and I started playing and singing. And I had a career that I hadn't even counted on.
Wow. So truly, you were just singing really almost from the time you were born.
Yeah, my mother was a singer, and she sang to me all the time. She never did it professionally, but singing was her thing. She loved to sing. So she was always humming or singing something. Even at the, you know, at the table, we're eating, her mouth would be full of food, and she'd be humming something. I knew the melody to everything, you know, that was out there, you know, on the radio or in the movies. She took me to the movies a lot, and she always hummed those beautiful songs from the films. So I was in the music long before I knew I was going to be in the music, you know.
Wow, quite the influence. Now, what inspired you to do the Beatles album, the Abbey Road, the other side of Abbey Road?
I hadn't planned on it, but the producer of the record, his name was Creed Taylor. He owned CTI Records. Or else, maybe this was before then, he was producing for A&M Records. He came to me and he said, George, I'll take this album and listen to it. Tell me what you think. So it was the Abbey Road album by the Beatles. I took it home and everything sounded so great to me. I said, hey, man, everything sounds good on here. He said, good, we'll do the whole album. I said, what? Because I knew what that was going to mean. In the jazz world, you know, because they were not Beatle fans, you know. Jazz critics hated the Beatles, you know. After hearing Paul's approach to things, I had a great respect for him as a singer. And as a songwriter, they're impeccable. He and John were just great songwriters, a great team. So we did the album, much to the chagrin of the critics who chopped it to pieces. I knew that one day the album was going to be important. And after Breezin' came out, several years later, actually 6 years later, it came back up to the, you know, for questioning again, or examination. And people considered it an icon album. And I knew that was going to happen with that record.
Wow, amazing. Yep. Funny business, the music business. Now, you also worked with Stevie Wonder. Are you still in touch with him these days?
Yeah, I saw him not too long ago. I did one of his songs on the record. I had done it. I was the first one to record My Shamir Moore after he did it originally. I had an instrumental version of it. And I just found a videotape where they recorded it live with me and a dancer from the people came from France to record it. And I saw it, and that was many years ago. We're talking about 1972. So I saw people from that session. So things do have a way of coming back around. So make sure when you do something, you do your best. That's my advice.
Good advice. George Benson, thank you so much. I am such a big fan. I have to tell you, there's records of yours I've played so many times, I've worn a hole in them.
I appreciate that. Look, as weird as it sounds, I do appreciate it.
Look forward to your show in Toronto. Thanks very much for taking the time.